Good morning. So this morning I'd like to work with some material that I was working with the first 2 days of the retreat we had at Hokyoji. And talk about it from a little bit of a different perspective. There's not much that's been written about this, but I found what I thought was an unidentified teacher who had written about it. But then Susan Nelson pointed out to me that the teacher was not unidentified, that it was a teacher named Bonnie Treese, who lives in New York and has a Zen center there. Maybe it's in New York City. I'm not sure. So I thank her together with everybody else for having shed some insight into this material I'm going to be talking about. So starting with the poem by the first part of a poem by Pablo Neruda. And it was at that age poetry arrived in search of me. I don't know. I don't know where it came from winter or a river. I don't know how or when. No, they were not voices. They were not words, nor silence, but from a street I was summoned. From the branches of night, abruptly from the others, among violent fires, or returning alone. There I was, without a face, and it touched me. So starting with the summit, I don't know how or when. No, they were not voices, they were not words, nor silence, but from a street I was summoned. So Zen practice, for most of us, we're summoned to do it, because it's not part of our culture. Our parents and our grandparents didn't say, you should start doing Zen practice. No, the next generation, that's going to be happening, actually. And there are a few of us who did it with our kids. We're old, really old. But it wasn't part of the dominant culture. And they may or may not have thought it was weird. But so most of us who are here are here. And we have a meditation practice. We wanted to develop one because we were summoned in some way, because we were called to leave the street behind and come and enter a world of silence. We believe we could do that, or we deeply wanted to do it. So we were summoned, and I talked in the retreat about the woman who became a teacher in Buddha's time, Padakara. And she was summoned by incredible suffering. She was summoned, this is her story very briefly. I spent a long time on a retreat. Very briefly, she had a husband and a child, and they went off on their own, and her husband was killed. She was 9 months pregnant, and she was in a very difficult situation in the wilderness, and she gave birth, both of her children were killed, and then she just went into an incredible, distraught frame of mind. Who wouldn't? Incredible suffering, and just became kind of a wild person with her suffering, wild with her pain, and then left the woods and just ran into Buddha, and Buddha did something. The scriptures don't say what, but he did something non-verbally. One thing is he put a shawl around her because she was naked. He covered her up. And then he said, it is time to recover your presence of mind. That's all it says in the Nikaya. It was time to recover your presence. And she trusted him, and she began then to practice and turn her life around. So that's a dramatic one. Most of us don't have ones that are quite that dramatic. Well, most of us luckily haven't suffered that much. And when I started, when I was called, if you want to call it that, when I was summoned, I read a book. I read a book called The Teachings of the Mystics by W.T. Stace, which may or may not still be in print. And I couldn't believe it. In this book, all of the different traditions, the mystic traditions, the esoteric, not the exoteric, talked about the experience of a peace that can't be understood, where there's no division between you and anything. And I was like 20. I thought I was well educated, but I had never heard of this before. And so I was called, but just by the book, to, geez, college, forget that, you know. Parents, forget that, you know. Career, forget that. And then I found a teacher who seemed to emanate that. At least I thought he did. Actually, I still think he did. But I could have just been naive. Well, I was just naive. That's okay. So in different ways, we're called to this. Different ways. Because it's not part of our culture. I was summoned from the branches of night, abruptly from the others, among violent fires. That's really Padachara, among violent fires. Or returning alone. And then that's kind of part of this practice too, isn't it? That we can only do it by ourselves. That seems we're summoned, we're called to do a meditation practice, but soon we discover that it's only us, all by ourselves. We don't have God who can help us. And we don't have a guru who can help us. We don't have a big mama who can help us. We do, in a sense. We call on all of them all the time. I do. But really, they can't, you know. This is a practice in solitude. This is a practice in aloneness. That's how we settle into this. And it's sort of a surprise. And you kind of never get used to it. I kind of never get used to it. I was summoned from the branches of night, abruptly from the others, among violent fires, or returning alone. There I was, without a face, and it touched me. It touched me. And of course, he doesn't say what touched him. He doesn't say, which is wonderful from a Zen point of view, right? Because it's because if you say something touched you, you're not really deeply touched by what Dogen calls suchness, what Suzuki Roshi used to call things as it is or isness, what the Upanishads call thusness. Boy, talk about precise use of language. Thusness, suchness, isness. Because it's that which is free from concepts and distinctions. It's free from concepts and distinctions. That's what we can really be touched by. That's when we can really be touched. So suchness. We'll say suchness, but don't. Better to say just it, maybe. But it sounds like a thing, so maybe suchness. Who knows? Anything you want. Who cares? Who cares? Suchness in Sanskrit. Tarata. Tarata. Suchness, right? And you look in the Sanskrit dictionary, and what does it say about sections? It says, that which is free from concepts and distinctions. Okay? You know, we really want suchness when we hear about it. Cool. There's only one definition. So now I'm going to talk about Dogen. I'm going to quote Dogen, a discussion of suchness, which is in your program, and talk a little bit about it. So Dogen, we intrinsically have the countenance of the person of suchness. We intrinsically have that countenance. Each of us, just as we are, is a manifestation of something great and unknowable. Something great and completely unknowable, just as we are. You can call it the Buddha nature, but that doesn't do it very, doesn't do it justice. Doesn't do it justice. We intrinsically have the countenance of the person of suchness, and so need not be anxious about the essence of suchness, because anxiety is itself the essence of suchness. It is not anxiety. Moreover, we need not be startled by the essence of suchness being this way. Even if suchness appears startling and suspicious, it is suchness all the time. There is that suchness by which you ought to be startled. So for so many of us, we come into Zen practice not feeling like we're good enough. This is such a common theme. I don't know if this is a theme in other cultures and other times, but it's such a common theme here in this time in our country. Not feeling good enough. Not good enough. Not good enough to really be able to embrace suchness, to be able to be touched by it. Not realizing that we're whole, just as we are. And that all life needs us just as we are. Not later when we practice all this great practice or all this great psychotherapy or whatever. Right now. And so the practice is the practice that Aldous Huxley talked about 50 years ago. It's the practice of taking a journey to arrive where we've always been. That's taking that journey. And since suchness is unconditional, it doesn't kick anything out, as Katagiri Roshi used to say. That used to be his expression. That is, if the anxiety is here, that's suchness. The depression is here, that's suchness. And this isn't glib. This isn't some kind of play of words. This is what is going on. So, since it's what is going on, it's suchness. It's really unknowable. Anxiety, apples, ants, suchness. Suchness. Every moment without adjustment, before we think we need to adjust it to be good enough, before we think that. And of course, in Zen, we believe that we access this power to have this radical acceptance through Zazen, through the sitting posture, through meditation, to realize that anxiety is suchness, that fear is suchness, that joy is suchness, and that in that suchness there's strength. There's strength in that, because it's suchness. There's power, there's energy in that anxiety. You think anxiety doesn't have a lot of energy to it? Try being really anxious. Try being really anxious. Incredible energy of suchness right there. You call it anxiety, you can call it suchness, whatever you want to call it. It's energetic. It's full of life. There's not no sloth. No sloth. Even depression, within that hopelessness, there's energy there. It's a different sort of energy, but there's energy. It's the energy of suchness. I mean, how could it be different? If it's unconditioned, how could it be different? And so, the teaching is that we can all manifest this. We can all wake up to it. We can all realize it in this moment. And Dogen says, to reiterate, we intrinsically have the countenance of the person of suchness, and so need not be anxious about the essence of suchness, because anxiety itself is the essence of suchness. It is not anxiety. So when I was young, I was the attendant of a guy named Chino Sensei. Now, he's dead now, Chino Roshi. Was his attendant at Tassajara, and he was a young teacher. He was a transmitted teacher. He was young. I don't know how young. And when Suzuki Roshi would leave Tassajara, he would put Chino Sensei in charge. And Suzuki Roshi gave a talk every day, so he expected Chino Sensei to give a talk every day. And Chino Sensei's English was not very good, and I was his attendant. And Chino Sensei was anxious. He was before his talks, right? He was anxious about having. He said, "Suzuki wants me to do this every day. Do I have to?" I said, "Well, what do I know? What do I know?" He said, "I have to." I said, "Okay, okay," and. So I watched him. With some sympathy, not with empathy really, because I hadn't had to give talks yet. Once I started to have to give talks, I began to really be empathic with him. So he gave them night after night. Then Suzuki Roshi would show up and give them, and he'd say, "How is it going?" And Chino would say, "Okay," and Suzuki didn't ask anymore. but then, by the end of the practice period, Suzuki Roshi was gone more, and so he was giving more. But I still saw his anxiousness ahead of time, and he actually had me as his attendant. He would have me in his room before he would give the talk, and he would whip up. I've talked about this before. He would whip up that really strong green tea, you know, that frothy kind. We both drink it, and I thought, "God, that can't be helping us." We both kind of scarfed it down. It helped me because while I was sitting and listening to him, I was just. So I said to him once, "Gee, this must be awful for you. Is this?" And he said, "Not awful." He said, "Great energy to teach Dharma." Well, that's all he said to me. All he said to me about that. And later, of course, he became a really well-known teacher. Well, pretty well-known. And he was different parts of the country, Mexico. And then he drowned in a river in Switzerland. So he didn't... drowned, saving, I think pulling out one of his sons who had fallen into the river or something. I don't know. Some of you may remember. Yeah.
It's a grandchild.
Grandchild? Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh. Because anxiety itself is the essence of suchness, it is not anxiety. It is not anxiety. The way he did it, he taught the Dharma from it. He taught the Dharma from it. even if suchness appears startling and suspicious. And of course, when suchness appears as anxiety, it's startling and suspicious. Maybe not for some of you, but for those of us who think our practice is pretty good, you know, we're pretty calmed down. Startling and suspicious. What's that coming up? What's that doing there now? I just got out of a pretty good zazen. My mind was pretty calm. What's that? I got to practice more, right? I got to practice harder starting tomorrow, right? I got to clean up my act. Clean up my life. So, whatever it is, whatever emotion, whatever activity you don't want to allow into your identity, can you start allowing it? Can you start really believing that it's the essence of suchness? Is it possible? And when I talked about this at the retreat, I talked about somebody came to see me in Doksan in one-to-one meeting afterwards, and they said to me, "What you said about suchness, I think it's wonderful because I have a lot of anxiety, but my anxiety exhausts me." Doesn't give me any energy, it drains all my energy. And that's true, isn't it? That anxiety is generally exhausting. It generally drains all our energy. But that's why we practice bare attention. That's why we practice mindfulness, so we can catch the anxiety in a friendly way, not in a net. So we can catch it early and then use it to serve, to help ourselves and others, as other people have done, and as lots and lots of people do once they radically accept, not just with your head, that anxiety, discouragement, joy, pleasure, it's all suchness. So Dogen writes, even if suchness appears startling and suspicious, it is suchness all the same. There is that suchness by which you ought to be startled. So now he's saying you ought to be startled by suchness. So what suchness is that that you ought to be startled by? Well, in a way, when your suchness appears as anxiety, it ought to startle you. Because that's the beginning of bare attention. That's the beginning of mindfulness. If it just startles you so you're there with it, so that you're not going on and on, you'll allow yourself to be startled by it. And then you can work with it. So, I only know a little bit about Mother Teresa's life, and some of you know much more than I do, but I did read a long, long article about her life a couple years ago, so I could be getting this wrong, but this is what I remember, and I have not researched it in 2 years. This is what I remember about her life, in particular, that's related to this, and that is that she went through a period of great anxiety, where her faith in God was gone, her faith in Jesus was gone, her faith in the sacraments of the Catholic Church were gone. And what did she do with that? Well, she took that, I mean, it came up in her prayer. She prayed every day, right? Like we do zazen every day. It came up, and where did she take it? To the streets of Calcutta. She didn't exhaust herself with it. She took it right out to the streets of Calcutta, right out to the untouchables. That's where she took it. She used it to serve, to help, to support. That's what I think. know, some of you could scrutinize the book and come up with something else, but that's what I remember. That's what I remember. And so Dogen says, Dogen goes on for a long time about everything, including this. That's where Suzuki Roshi got it, probably, and where Katagiri Roshi got it, and where I got it. It's not a great habit, but there it is. Even if we say the truth exists, it is not something that is bound to the vicinity of the ego self. Because it is suchness, it is something that arouses the Bodhi mind spontaneously. The Bodhi mind, the mind of wakefulness, the mind of openness, the mind of suchness, which doesn't kick anything, any feeling out, any emotion out, any thought out. Once this mind arises, we throw away what we played with before, and we vow to hear what has not yet been heard, and we seek to verify what has not yet been verified. Because it is suchness, it is something that arouses the mind, the Bodhi mind, the mind of awakening spontaneously. Once this mind arises, we throw away what we played with before, and we vow to hear what has not yet been heard. So it takes courage to do that. For Chino Sensei, it took courage for him to stand up there every day in front of us, although we weren't much. I don't know why. I mean, he could have said just about anything that was not, you know, that was kind of far out or something, right? He made choices. He made choices. He said to me, I want to share Dharma. I want to share Dharma. And I said, well, you could use an interpreter. There was a guy down there who was an interpreter. He said, no, in between, share Dharma. And I said, well, you could read, here's some nice things you could read. He said, no. I said, well, I could help you with your language. You could write the talk out. He said, well, maybe write out, but no read. Want to share Dharma. So the mind of suchness that senses awakened life and inspires self-action is moving in us. The Buddha mind, it's moving in us. It's suchness. Can we trust it? Can we trust it? Is it possible to do that? So another reflection from my own life. So the last, I think actually I talked about this once, maybe in February. About the beginning of February, I found out that the governor, I have another job, working. Director of a nonprofit agency that has programs for people with mental illness. And I found out at the beginning of February that the governor's budget eliminated two of our services, just wiped them out. And one of the services that it wiped out was our service for homeless people with mental illness, which we had been working on developing for years. I came to this agency 13 and a half years ago, and like my first week on the job, I went to one of our drop-in centers, and I saw these two lines of people in the drop-in center, one waiting for the washing machine and the other waiting for the shower. And I didn't even realize before that how many people with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, serious and persistent depression, anxiety disorder, live outside night after night. So then we began working to change it and develop services. And then a lot of other people joined us. It wasn't just us. So I found out that he just wiped it out, or his staff. I mean, it's easy to make Pawlenty the bad guy. It got wiped out, right? It got wiped out. So then I worked with the legislature to get it back in February, March, April. Every morning after Zazen, I usually leave my tie on. Get over to the legislature to work on it, right? So the legislature put it back in. It was a struggle, the House and the Senate and da-da-da and hanging around. They put it back in. Then, and my anxiety went away, right? I had a different form of suchness. I had the suchness of, wow, look at what we accomplished. Woo hoo hoo! Yippee! Different type of suchness. But, well, then what happened? You guys know what happened. The governor said, you guys, I'm unallotting all this stuff. You're not being fiscally prudent. We shouldn't be taxing the wealthy. They'll move away. They'll move away. You're not being fiscally prudent. So all of a sudden, my suchness changed. Because your suchness is always changing. You want some special kind of suchness. That's just in your mind. That's in your mind. Suchness is suchness. It's isness. So then my anxiety, immediately I began thinking, where do I know some Republicans who have money? I mean, that's really, my whole focus was that. How can I find Republicans with money? That's my anxiety. That's what I spent then hours on, who had some interest in supporting people with mental illness. And then, with my, not just by myself, but with my friends. And we found two Republicans who had been big contributors to Plenty. Then how do I get, well, they said they'd write letters. Okay. We hand deliver the letters because we know mail, you know. So this is the anxiety of partly of these people having to move outside, me having to lay off staff. And then my ego. I mean, I accomplished all this. We accomplished all this. So ego, right? So we came up with all kinds of creative ideas. And we then got our letters in. Chief of staff ignored us. I kept calling him back, pointed out who these guys were. He said the governor didn't want to hear anything during working hours about fundraising or funders who'd fund him, so I didn't. Next time I call him, I didn't mention that, but I just mentioned these guys said they'd like to meet him. I talked them into going to meet him, but no, the governor wouldn't see them. But the chief of staff, well, the chief of staff was too busy. Well, finally, we got in to see the chief of staff, and the moment we walked in the door, the governor had changed his mind. The chief of staff told us. These were the two programs the governor wanted to fund. These were tax-effective programs. They helped the disenfranchised. They were at the top of his list to maintain, not to wipe out, which was just the opposite of what the chief of staff had told me the week before. Oh, democracy. Or would you call it plutocracy? Look that up. I said democracy, and my friend said, look up plutocracy in the dictionary. And now I don't know for sure, right? I'm waiting. I haven't done any unallotting yet. Well, right now the anxiety's gone, my suchness is sort of ambiguous suchness, right? Ambiguous. Wait and see suchness. So each of us is responsible for this tenuous, trembling life in suchness. And we're all going to suffer. We're going to suffer millions of times in millions of ways. But that's what it is. And it's suchness. It's suchness. And we're responsible for it. But we don't have to get all excited about that. All we have to do is be with it notice its energy and use its energy to support, to help ourselves and others. More Dogen. We already have the face and eyes of a person of suchness, and we shouldn't worry about the matter of suchness in the present moment, because this worry itself is a matter of suchness. Right? There is an expression that's been spoken since ancient times, that has been spoken from India, and that has been spoken from heaven. He doesn't say from hell, but I'll say from hell. It is, if you fall because of the ground, then you get up by using the ground. If you seek to get up apart from the ground, in the end it is not possible. So if the ground is anxiety, then you use your anxiety. If the ground is fear, then you fall into the fear and use it to get up. If it's discouragement, that's the ground. You want some other kind of ground. Everybody else does, I know. But what about this ground? It's pretty steady. You'll fall down, and you'll get up in using this ground. If you try to use some other ground, like Buddha or enlightenment or peace you don't have, you're just going to create more woo-woo stuff, more. So how about this ground? How about using this very ground? So that we can realize and practice and manifest the non-duality of anxiety and suchness and ants and suchness and apples and suchness and oranges and suchness. So when I was talking about this at retreat, I talked about my grandson's learning to walk. But it's not just look at any little child learning to walk. They want to learn to walk, they fall down. They fall down on this ground, on this floor, and they get up on this floor. For a while they can crawl upstairs to the rug, but after a while, if they're really going to live, they just have to fall down where they are and get up where they are. That's when you can really start living, when you do that. When you just do that, when you have the faith just to do that. That because you can fall down, you can get up. You wouldn't be falling if you couldn't get up. It's the same energy. It's the energy of suchness. Tumbling and trusting. Tumbling and trusting. In the tumble, if you really let go, there's trusting. In standing up, there's scariness, but there's also trusting in the fact that you just stand yourself up. That's trusting. That's trusting. So, as our friend, my friend, because all these teachers are my friends, Pablo Neruda says, there I was, without a face, and it touched me. The ground touches you. And you don't cling to anything, you just get up. And then you cling to something. And that clinging itself is the essence of suchness. So you just fall down with your clinging and get up with your clinging. But if you keep doing this, your clinging is not going to hang around too long. It's going to sort of get jostled by your bare attention to the very act of going down and coming up. So that's what I have to say this morning. And I'll be glad to take questions or comments.
How do you make that conversion of that energy? You know, we were talking about Mother Teresa and how she... She converted that energy.
Yeah.
She redirected that energy.
Yeah.
Is there obviously there's no formula, but what's the internal shift that has to happen?
Well, I know this doesn't sound very Buddhist, but the internal shift, I was going to say, is faith. But it's not faith in something outside. It's just the internal shift is that, well, with Padachara, her internal shift was that she had just given up on everything. So sometimes in Zazen, you just give up on everything. And so the faith comes from just, there's nothing left. But it doesn't have to be that severe. Sometimes you just kind of let go and that faith is there. So there is no formula and really no map, but the sitting process itself, the meditation process itself, brings you more and more into this sort of natural state of bare attention, and then you can just trust stuff. So first you're practicing the bare attention, you're practicing, it doesn't work. It works for some things, but not for my pain in the legs. And then it begins to work even a little bit for my pain in the legs. It works for a little bit of anxiety, but not for all this anxiety. And then it begins to work on its own. On its own. In its own time. Not in your time. Not in my time.
But okay. So would you say that suchness was like being available to interact with whatever comes up? Because in some way what you were saying sounded a little bit like, you know, suchness goes with whichever way the wind blows.
Well, suchness just is. It's not, suchness is not being available. Or not being available. It's just the isness. Just is. You nodding your head, me trying to be responsive to you, the water here, it just is. Suchness means isness, thusness.
Because you were talking about suchness being different. Like,
no, not okay. Different.
I heard.
Yeah, no. Different too, sure, different, but different, but not different from something outside it. It's unconditioned. Sure, it's completely different, but not from something outside it. That's why it's also completely the same. Right? Yeah?
I was just actually reading about faith in the Uchiyama Roshi commentary. He talks about that shortly. And though it seems like what you just said was not something outside of you,
mm-hmm.
which I understand, not having faith in a god or a leader or an object. And so having faith in suchness as reality, truth,
mm-hmm.
or whatever you want to call it, but what is there?
Mm-hmm.
That is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And it can't be known in the way we usually know things because it's too alive, it's too dynamic, its motion is too powerful. Man, it's everything. And it's nothing. And I'm not trying to be clever. Anything else this morning?
If so say there's some critical event that a person feels that they're called by, how can you balance not giving that too much significance and yet facing it, allowing that suchness of it, even if it takes time or keeps coming back? How can, I guess, the fixation on that book or on that event fit?
Well, in your bare attention practice, in your mindfulness practice, you're noticing that. You're noticing that. Like, let's say, for instance, that Okay, so I've got some book here that I'm really attached to because it's got the one true teaching in it, right? So this book of the one true teaching, I'm feeling anxious because I don't want to lose this book and I want to remember the things in it because it tells me about suchness and it's got pictures of all my teachers and, you know, et cetera, right? Something like that. So there it is. And it's my, what I think is my entree into suchness. This book is my entree into suchness. So it's got Ramana Maharshi and Mother so-and-so and Father so-and-so and Suzuki Roshi and Katagiri Roshi. So it's suchness. And then I'm anxious about losing it. But I bring that anxiety about losing it into my bare attention, whether I'm doing the bare attention on the cushion or in the kitchen or when I'm actually putting the book aside. And when I bring that attention to it, then at that moment, the energy just isn't in the attachment to the book. My mind opens, maybe just a little way, and I'm detached from the book and open to energy. And it happens little by little, and it doesn't happen through conscious thinking, but it happens through bare attention. You look puzzled. Which is fine. It's the essence of suchness. Do you want to say something more? Ask something more? Anybody else? Yeah.
This is kind of something I thought about recently. Kind of a devil's advocate kind of question.
Oh, the devil's advocate. Are we going to let the devil into suchness or not?
Before you have faith in suchness, how do you know that suchness is a good thing?
Suchness is not a good thing. Suchness is just. It's not a good thing. Why? Suchness is not a thing. So how do you have some inspiration to practice? Maybe that, if we rephrase it, how do you have an inspiration to practice? Because you're touched. Even in a preliminary way, I was touched by reading this book. I mean, it was just a soft cover book in the middle of campus. But I was touched. I was opened up a little bit. My mind slowed down a little bit. And I felt connected, or the possibility of being connected. I really didn't feel connected. I still felt pretty disconnected. But within those pages, I felt the possibility of connecting. You still have something?
Yeah, earlier in the talk, you were talking about how we need to be, or it would be a good idea to be surprised when certain substances arise.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But could you say that we should be surprised or, you know, focused on whatever it is that's arising, something that's slightly different out of the norm? I mean, if like a person's always, you know, generally feels this particular type of thing, but maybe it's anxiety, and then when something different arises, I mean, is it anxiety that we should focus on and, you know, pay attention to that arise, or is it when something kind of new?
Well, of course, in beginner's mind, which is what suchness is, everything is new, because nothing repeats itself, right? It's isness, just ising. Right? Well, I mean, what more can I say? Thusness, thusing. So, everything's surprise. There's nobody to be surprised, but it's all new. Because nothing is repeatable. Every pattern is always changing. So then, the question is, what should you do? So now I'm just confused about...
I think, not what I should do, I'm not always in the
right, of course.
You know, It's easy to think, well, here's this again, here's this again.
Right.
But I guess, I just kind of wonder if it's maybe getting that, well, maybe it is getting kind of that mindset of keeping your eyes open, witnessing when that something kind of different is emerging, or something even subtle, different thoughts or feelings.
That's right. It's just, I know I'm a broken record, but it's just bare attention. It's just seeing it come up. Being so close to it that when you're really close to something, it doesn't get you. Usually we're not that close. That's why Chino was able to give these wonderful talks out of his anxiety. Because he said, no, I'm not going to read my talk, I'm not going to do an interpreter, I'm just going to stand before my friends who are practicing together and just speak. Which took a risk, took some courage. I don't know if he had any faith. He knew it was the Dharma, to be present in reality. So I guess that is faith. Yeah, I guess he did trust. Anything else?